I don't understand it. Maybe that's why I couldn't remember about the dragons. I mean, how they're related to the lizards Zatannis had. It seemed impossible that they could be the same, or that he would send dragons to ravage his own side as well as the enemy. So I suppose I just didn't believe it. Until almost too late.
Better take another berry and find out. We can't afford many more surprises like dragons coming into the fray. I never guessed the evil sorcerer could control dragons.
But it's only been a few days since she had a berry. We don't know whether it's safe for her to...
It isn't safe to go into battle against dragons. Those could have been our boys as well as theirs getting chomped.
I'm sure it's all right. I do feel woozy after a berry, but a good night's sleep helps. And I recover strength next day.
I don't know. You're losing weight.
Why don't you go outside and play, child?
I'll try to eat better.
You look just fine to me.
You're getting better at expressing yourself, I think.
Here's the situation. Our camp is closer to the site of the battle than Zatannis' den is, and we hurried, so I'm sure we got home first. But the evil sorcerer will be getting the news about the battle within the hour. If we can spy on his reaction when he learns, we may find out what we need to know. It's the best possible time. We know that it's no use wearing you out spying when Zatannis is asleep or eating or not doing anything special. We have to catch him when he's plotting against us. Then we can counter his plots.
It did make sense, Kelvin had to agree. He hated to see Helen seem to die, but she did recover, and they did need the information. That business with the dragons had been entirely too close. Helen settled onto her bed and swallowed a dragonberry. Soon, she sank into her coma. The others left, but Kelvin remained beside her, ill at ease. If only she didn't have to risk her life this way to help their cause. And if only he could express himself adequately to her, instead of always being so confounded tongue-tied. She had made it plain that she would be receptive to his advances within reasonable limits. He felt so silly, bumbling about. But every time he tried to do something about it, he wound up blushing again.
Gods, Helen, I wish I weren't such an ass with you. I wish I could just take you in my arms. I wish I could kiss you and say, Helen, I think I love you, and I want to be always with you. But I just can't. I know I'm a jackass and I hate it, but my stupid tongue just tangles in my mouth and I blush. Gods, I wish I didn't blush. Oh, how I would curse myself if you didn't wake. If somehow the berries, if the worst happened and you, if I'd never even said to you.
Then everything clouded up and he found himself bent over her cold hand, his tears flowing as he kissed it.
Damn. If I'm a hero, they just don't make them the way they used to.
Then embarrassed anew, he pulled out his shirt tail and used it to dry off her hand. If she should ever suspect he had made a scene like this. Helen recovered consciousness as her spirit separated from her body. This was the third time she had traveled astrally, and she was learning its pattern. She hovered above her body, gathering her presence, getting ready to make the jump to the evil magician's lair. Her vision cleared, and then her hearing. Kelvin was with her body, as he had been the last time. She truly appreciated his loyalty. He was holding her hand.
God's hell! I wish I weren't such an ass with you!
What was this? He hadn't spoken before, as far as she knew. She decided to wait a moment more and see what this led to.
I wish I could just take you in my arms.
Well, apparently Kelvin could be much more expressive when he thought he was alone.
I wish I could kiss you and say, Helen, I think I love you, and I want to be always with you.
Well, why don't you?
But I just can't.
Helen continued to listen and watch until he completed his statement. When it was evident that he would say no more, she gathered herself for the jump to the other place. But she was thoughtful. She understood Kelvin better now. How could she make the best use of this explanation of his puzzling behavior? Because of her delay, she arrived at Zatannis' residence just after the messenger left. She hoped she hadn't missed anything critical. She phased into the dusky chamber where the evil sorcerer and his dwarf henchmen were.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. That messenger just now said we lost nearly 200 guardsmen to dragons. Dragons! What incredible, astounding luck! Blackstar curses on the witless beasts.
But, Master, didn't they attack the knights? Didn't they get some of them, at least?
No.
But why, Master?
Because, stupid dwarf, dragons destroy all men without natural discrimination. They have very small brains, even smaller than yours.
But you directed them with lizards. The images were dressed as knights.
So that was it, Helm realized. The dragons had been guided to attack the knights first. And, of course, the guardsmen would have quickly gotten out of the way. Helm knew that Morven and Kelvin would be glad to know that explanation. Costumes were the key.
Quite right. But the infernal knights were not present. Somehow they got out of the pass before the dragons came. And the guardsmen were still there, luxuriating in the knight's rout.
Then they were defeated. Master, the guardsmen had the ruffians beat.
That's what the guardsmen want to think, but not I. I think that somehow one of the knights must have been above the pass and seen the dragons and called retreat.
But...
Exactly. It shouldn't have happened. Next time it will not happen. Next time the dragons will see knights and not be tempted by guardsmen.
How, Master?
Through sensible intelligence. I intend to make good use of my daughter's spies, her official spies.
But your magic, Master. Can't you see ahead without...
No. The ingredients are missing for the spells. Anyway, you are confusing precognition with clairvoyance.
What?
Seeing ahead is precognition. That magic I can do when I have the right ingredients for the magic. Which ingredients are so devious and perishable that I am chronically short of them? Seeing around is clairvoyance, knowing what is happening elsewhere without going there. That magic I lack. How I wish I had an astral propensity.
Master?
Oh, never mind. Muvar, cursed be his memory, was precognitive, and he believed that there would be clairvoyance among men someday. But he was mistaken. Only the dragons have it, and they're too stupid to take advantage of it, fortunately. What a waste it was for Muvar to have precognition, when I could have used it to conquer the planet and the dragons.
Master, will the dragons do your bidding?
They will. Everything will. In time.
And the Queen's guardsmen will defeat the knights?
They will be defeated, as surely as I am the supreme sorcerer.
Then Helm's time was running out, and she had to return to her body. She hoped she had learned enough. Certainly she now had explanations for some mysteries. So the dragons did use the berries for astral separation, and Zatanis knew it, but didn't know about Helm's own ability to do it too. And Muvar had had precognition. That suggested that the prophecy Muvar had made was valid. Still, why then did Zatanis have such confidence in his own victory? Kelvin paced the outside length of the tent, the side farthest from the campfire. His concern was the sour, bile taste in his mouth left by continual efforts to vomit. It wasn't fear that caused his stomach to revolt. Not exactly. It was doubts. They formed and reformed like the long, grotesque shadows of the crumbs and two of the knights on the other side of the tent wall. What he was doing was right and just. He had to believe that. But the killing was as unheroic as slaughtering a farm animal. His gauntlet did it, and each time he felt sick. He wanted to escape the destiny the prophecy had claimed for him, but that was, according to all accounts, impossible. He sat down under a tree and looked at the moon peering like a yellow goblin face through the twisty, dark branches. By and by, he He raised his hands to his eyes, and quietly, so as not to be heard and discovered, he wept.
Kelvin!
Kelvin tried to clean up his face, but it was way too late for that. She had seen.
You should be resting.
There is something more important.
The revolution?
That too. You don't look well, Kelvin. I'm concerned about you.
I'm just not much of a hero for sure.
I suppose the only thing harder than being brutalized is having to be brutal yourself.
He stared at her. Could she understand?
I was raped. I wanted to die. I tried to die. I think I felt as bad as you do now.
I guess I really don't have much to complain about. I guess I wasn't thinking.
No, Kel, no, that's not what I mean at all. I mean, I do understand. You're in a horribly difficult situation, having to do things you don't like at all, like going out into battle and killing people. You're a gentle person. You don't like to fight, and I see it tearing you up, just the way it would tear me up if I had to do it. And I wish I could make it easier for you. Kel, I like you the way you are. It's not just your round ears, and it's certainly not the prophecy. I liked you when I first saw you. In my first astral separation, when everyone else was hustling you along and you didn't know what to do, you just wanted to save your sister from the Mart. You gave me reason to want to live because you were like me in the ears, and that helped a lot, but I think I would have liked you anyway. And I liked you even more when I just saw you in my last astral journey.
What?
Kel, I didn't go right away. I heard you talking to me.
Oh, no.
Do you know what I have to say to that?
If I'd known, I'm so sorry.
She reached around him, embracing him, drawing him in close.
Kel, I think I love you.
Then she drew him in closer yet and lifted her face and kissed him. At last, she broke the kiss and gazed at him.
Now you may slap my face if you wish.
Then they were both clinging to each other for support. She felt phenomenally good that way, too.
But there is a condition.
No difference.
And that is, if I'm going to be close to you, I want you more like the hero you are supposed to be.
I just can't enjoy killing.
Nor should you. I want you to assert yourself. You, not Morvan Krum, are the round ear of prophecy. You should make the key decisions.
But he's the only one who knows.
Listen to him, certainly, but don't be governed by him.
I suppose.
Make up your mind, hero, or I'll kiss you again.
I just doubt that I can...
When the kiss was over, he felt pleasantly giddy.
I'll try.
See that you do.
Now we'll attack this guardsman's barracks.
Morvan Krum pointed at the map. The heads of all those who had been designated officers nodded agreeably. Kelvin swallowed. He thought of Helen's kisses.
Yes. I mean no.
The eyes of all the six strong men in the tent were turned to him. Morvan seemed amused. The others were either surprised or openly incredulous. They all knew that Kelvin was a mere figurehead.
I don't understand, youngster.
Pete Palmweaver was the youngest and in many ways the most likable of the greybeards who had fought guardsmen before Kelvin's birth.
I may be a youngster to you, but I'm also the round ear of prophecy. I feel that I should decide what is done in my name.
Where then?
We must move as close to the palace as possible. Bypass the barracks and attack here.
Kelvin pointed with his finger to the area in front of the palace.
That'll be hard to do. It'll mean going over Craggy Mountain.
We will do it. Instead of attacking Heening, we bypass Heening. And Dawdling, and Kinsis. We move directly to Gorshin.
I don't know, youngster. That's a pretty illogical move, seems to me.
Maybe. That's exactly what the Queen's strategists will think. They could have ambushes at any of those places. We can't afford to take the chance.
Just could be. Too bad we don't have any way to know for sure.
Yes, too bad.
You think they will expect us to attack the barracks at Heening?
I do.
Well, I suppose we could give out the story that we planned an attack on Heening with subsequent ones in mind for the others. Then we could do as you suggest, just in case there are any spies.
There aren't any spies.
But Kelvin wondered. He did not always trust the faces he saw turn to follow his every move when he strolled around camp. It occurred to him that Morvan didn't either. Maybe it was Morvan's notion to test for spies in this manner, to rout them out before they found out about Helm. Certainly, he had the impression that Morvan didn't really mind Kelvin's assumption of power. Still, his doubts about both their situation and his ability to lead were not fading out. Kelvin looked back at the column of knights following him and John and the Crumbs and Palmweaver. They had gone about 2 leagues, and already the horses were noticing the steep ascent. No road here, only the paths made by Deus, Mir, and other large game. The footing was rough. Broken shale and fallen boulders made it hard on men and horses. The sky was overcast, threatening rain.
It's a long, long way to Gorshin, as I told you. By now we could be at Heening.
What say, Kel? I say that we will take them by surprise at Gorshin.
I sure hope you're right, brother mine.
John had insisted on coming along, but her enthusiasm was waning as she got tired. At Heening, a huge dragon reared its golden head, smacked its enormous mouth, and looked about the deserted barracks. Where were the brownberry shirts and green briar pantaloons of the morsels it had been driven here to find? It stepped on a fence, squashed a roof, and bit in two a large timber that had formed part of a now ruined catapult. The dragon always knew hunger and rage, but now it knew more. Behind the big dragon were 4 lesser dragons that came barely above the rooftops of the barracks. They reacted as strongly. Dragons liked feasting and dreaming and mating in that order, and combinations of the 3 when they could work it. They did not like hunger or boredom. Tails lashed, walls smashed, timbers splintered. The strong smell of dragon urine and excrement mingled with the lesser odor of human beings. The smell of food. But where was it? The buildings were being demolished, but they were empty. Then the breeze changed. The big dragon raised his snout. There, hiding on the hillside, food. As appetite sharpened, the dragons rushed for the blue and gold clad men hiding behind bushes and trees and rocks. They brushed aside the little sticks that rained off their scales and the larger sticks leveled at them by men astride horses. The dragons slapped their tails, gnashed their teeth, chomped, squashed, and ate. There was food here, after all. The queen's guardsman arrived on a lathered horse at the gate of the palace. He called to the gate man and was admitted, then was taken by a guard directly to the audience chamber.
Queen, we deserted the barracks and waited, as commanded, but the enemy did not appear. The dragons did appear. They destroyed Heening as we expected they would, and then they found us.
Do you mean to say that the dragons attacked guardsmen again?
Yes, your majesty. The enemy was not about. The dragons attacked. They destroyed us. There's not a guardsman alive who can stand up to a dragon.
Father! Father, come in here now and explain why you have done this to me.
Satanas went through the velvet curtain behind the throne. The queen was a sight he would rather have missed. She sat on her golden throne, her skin red as dragon sheen hair, her eyes the color of dark green feline magic, alight with the cometing yellow lights of intense anger. Her fingers gripped the carved arms of her throne like talons, and she looked more like a witch than a monarch. A witch from some land deep down through the flaw, more inhuman than human. In short, his daughter, in her natural state.
My dear daughter and proudest materialization, the enemy is using magic, Muvar's magic, cursed be his name. How else then by magic could they have known?
The question is, Father, why didn't you know? Are you a sorcerer or are you not?
I was depending on your spies, Why haven't they...
Foolish old fraud! My spies gathered their intelligence. The Roundheel's knights were supposed to have attacked Heening. You stood here when they reported. You knew!
I knew what they said. But the knights were not there, Your Majesty, as this man has just testified.
Don't belabor the obvious. Then I suppose they are somewhere else?
Undoubtedly. The question is, where?
The question is why there should be a question at all. If you can't...
They were interrupted by a second guardsman who burst into the audience chamber in the company of a guard.
Your Majesty, I beg to report that the Rounder knights have attacked Gorshin. Caught unprepared, we were outnumbered and we...
Beaten?
The man hung his head. After brief questioning that established the extent of the disaster, the Queen dismissed the others, remaining alone with her father.
You unmitigated wretch! I should have you castrated in the public square! Why didn't you know of this?
Think carefully before you threaten me, daughter. It was my magic that made you queen.
Yes, magic made me queen. Roundheer magic. I used it then and I'll use it again.
No, no, you mustn't. You must never use Roundheer magic again.
Oh, mustn't I?
No, it's risky. Better to destroy all Roundheers and all tools brought by Roundheers. Better my magic than...
Father, would you have me destroy my own magic?
No, no, of course not.
I intend to use all tools and all persons to secure my throne.
Of course, daughter, but with care. Due care, otherwise...
It's this Roundheer stripling who claims to represent the prophecy. I'm going to use my spy in their camp to eradicate him once and for all. Then this nuisance will fade out.
But you shouldn't waste an emplaced spy.
What good has he been to me so far? If he can't get word about the enemy's movements to me in time, I might as well use him in a manner that counts.
She was making a certain amount of sense, but Zatanas didn't trust this. It would be almost impossible to get another spy placed once this one was exposed. And, if he failed in his mission, as was quite possible considering the way the breaks had been going, still, this was better than risking the wrong kind of magic. It was true that the elimination of the enemy figurehead could have considerable impact, and perhaps so demoralized the upstarts that their effort would fall apart.
What do you have in mind, daughter?
I was always apt at poisons. It will be nice to get my hand in again.
Very good, daughter.
John skipped a rock on the smooth stretch of creek. It hopped three times as a well-skipped rock was supposed to. The circles formed and raced outward.
I bet there's fish in here.
You're probably right.
If I had some equipment, I could catch us some.
Not enough of the whole camp, you couldn't.
The knight came over. His hair color was brick, and his name, appropriately, was Appleton. She had seen him around often enough. He was, she guessed, about 3 years older than Kelvin, and halfway handsome.
But I'd enjoy trying. I get tired of just running errands for you fellows. I'd like to be doing something besides polishing boots and fetching firewood and spring water.
I don't blame you. It does get dull here.
I wish I had some magic. I wish I was a knight.
You're useful enough. But you know, you should try dressing your own way.
How's that?
Like a woman. You'd be a really pretty girl if you'd ever let yourself.
Well, I don't want to be a girl.
Well, I could see your point if you were an ordinary girl. But even though you'd try to cover them up, I can see the lines of you. You would be no ordinary girl.
I wouldn't?
No, not at all. I tell you, you could start smiting hearts right here in the camp if you tried.
Me?
You! You've got the face, you've got the lines. Look at the way that Roundheer girl took over your brother. You're as pretty as she is.
Never!
I'll make you a bet that if you borrowed one of her dresses and walked out in the camp, you could beckon any man here, and he would come to you.
Well, you're teasing me.
Am I? Then laugh this off.
He took her by the shoulders, brought her into him, and kissed her on the mouth. She felt the pressure of his hands on her, so strong and firm, and his lips on hers, and she felt as if she were floating. Then he drew his head back and released her.
There. I'd be lying if I said that wasn't fun. But I suppose you'd better slap me.
What?
I just made a pass at you. Because you're an attractive young woman. Now you slap me, because I shouldn't have done it. That's the way it is.
Well, I couldn't do that.
John had to sit down on the bank before she fell down. He sat beside her.
Well, maybe next time. A girl can't be too free is all. Bad for her reputation.
When I was at the Boy Mart, they found out and tried to...
Like Ms. Flambeau. That's different. They do it to anything they can get their hands on. But among civilized folk, it's different. You're in no danger here.
Well, I don't know. It's a whole different realm. It's like magic.
Magic is what you make it. I know the feeling. My granny was a witch woman and spellmaker.
Really? She turned people into frogs and bad birds?
Hardly. She could mend a broken arm, ease the pangs of childbirth, cure barrenness, that sort of thing.
Oh, no real magic.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. She knew a thing or two, granted.
About what?
Oh, about our name fruits, for instance. Oh, apples and appleberries.
What did she do with them?
Put magic into them. She could make a weak man strong, or a strong man weak, and I learned from her.
You did, huh? Magic?
That's what I said, Hackleberry.
Could you help Kelvin?
Help him? In what way?
Well, I don't think he's brave as he could be, or as strong.
I could probably help him there, if that's true.
You could?
I think so. I know the spells. Let me mix a stock cap full of appleberries and you take them to him. Only don't tell him they're magicked. If you do, they won't work.
I won't tell, and he'll eat them. Kelvin never could resist a stock cap full of fresh wild appleberries.
Kelvin was sitting on a log, staring glumly at a map and picking at a scab on his hand where a knife had slipped. John rode up on Muckery. Wordlessly, John held out a stuckle cap filled with ripe red and white appleberries.
For me, John?
I got lucky. Found a whole patch of them. Maybe not as sweet as you can make them when you do the picking, but pretty good anyway.
It's awfully soon after lunch, and my stomach's been bothering me.
Appleberries should fix that right up.
You never brought me appleberries before. Usually I had trouble keeping you out of those I picked.
I'm reformed. And you're important. God dang it, Kel. Can't I do something nice for my own brother?
Of course you can, John. Of course. But climb on down and we'll eat them together.
They're all for you. I ate my fill when I found them.
I should have known.
Kelvin hesitated.
What's the matter, Kel?
This fool gauntlet. All of a sudden it feels warm. Matter of fact, it tingles. There aren't any of the Queen's own around, are there?
I don't think so, Kel.
Well...
Kelvin took the stopple cap with his right hand and placed it at the end of his log. But as he set it down, his left hand shot out and sent the stopple cap flying. The berries rolled into the dust under Mockery's nose.
Now why did it do that? That gauntlet ruined the treat you brought me.
John wondered, too. Could the gauntlet object to Kelvin becoming brave? So that maybe he wouldn't need it so much? Mockery didn't wonder. His nostrils flared, he lowered his head, and began to eat appleberries.
John, is there something different about these berries?
Different?
Mockery gave a jerk. His eyes rolled until the white showed. He trembled from nose to tail, and then, to John's complete horror, he slowly sank downward.
John, what's going on? What's the matter with Mockery? What? Where did you get those berries? What's wrong with them anyway?
Mockery was either dead or dying. She let that sink in until she not only believed it, she understood the cause. Then, painfully, she answered Kelvin.
He said the berries were magic, that they would help make you brave.
John, your donkey's been poisoned!
I didn't know! I didn't kill, honest, I thought... Oh, I was a fool!
I believe you, Brother Wart, no need to cry.
Yes, there is, he...
He sweet-talked me. Told me I'd make a pretty girl, and I believed everything.
Well, he was right about that much. You'd be as pretty as Helen is if you tried.
But it was only to fool me. So I'd bring you poison. Oh, Kel, I'm so ashamed.
No need, John. Anyone would have been fooled. We'll find him and question him. Who was it?
Appleton. Oh, I hate him. I hate him.
Kelvin blew on his horn, and every knight within hearing dropped what he was doing and came. But Appleton, of course, was not among them.
I've got to do it, Kel. You know that. After what happened...
After they tried to poison me. That means that Appleton was a spy for the Queen, and we'd better find out if there are any others.
Yes. I can scout around astrally and see if I can locate Appleton. But mainly, I'd better spy on Zatanas and try to learn what mischief he's cooking up next.
Better wait a bit. They have scouts out, and we can spot those, but let them go. When the first one reports to the Queen, that's when we'll likely learn something from her or Zatanas. Timing is everything, in spying as in battle.
Kelvin had to agree with the logic of that. He certainly didn't want Helen taking such a risk for nothing. Also, it meant she could wait another day or two before eating a berry. He still hated to have her go into that temporary death. Zatanas scowled his blackest and tried his best to look the part of the menacing warlock. His daughter, unfortunately, did not seem impressed.
I want you to drain his blood.
But why? His blood is worthless to me. Only the blood of some truly innocent person, or a virgin of either sex, has the potency required for my magic.
Never mind that. I want revenge. He was supposed to have destroyed the upstart, claimed he did. And what had he done but send a girl on a man's mission? No wonder it failed. Let him now take the place of that girl.
Better I work on my invincibility spell. Your agent failed, and that is unfortunate. But then the round ear was protected by magic.
You think so?
I know it. Just as I know that no part of your agent, Appleby, was that his name, is of any worth. Perhaps my lizards can feed on him. That should cause him some reasonable agony.
You won't take his blood?
No. If you want him bled, use your royal torturer. That pig likes to waste flesh.
But it's you he fears. He knows the royal torturer will only harm his body. Whereas you...
I gave you my final word, daughter. I won't waste my time on worthless flesh.
Ah, stubborn old man!
Bothersome witch!
The messenger arrived covered with dust and sweat, smelling of blood and horse. He was quickly ushered by the palace guards directly into the Queen's audience chamber.
Oh, Queen, I beg to inform you that the Roundears' knights are nearing Skagmore, but one day's ride from this palace!
The Queen scowled at the messenger and then at Peter Flick, her latest and weakest-chinned consort. She liked her men servile.
What do you think of that, Peter? The old man's magic isn't helping us.
I say that now is the time. Use Roundear magic against your Roundear enemy. Do it now, Your Majesty, while there is yet time.
Prophecy. How can mortals, or even immortals, fight against it? Prophecy always works out.
Not always as expected. There's a Roundear who is your enemy, but is he the only Roundear? No, certainly not. You have one of our own, my queen.
Yes, so you've reminded me. So why do I hesitate?
Peter looked at her with that abject, lustful longing that was his prime attraction. He existed to treasure her mind and body as fully as was possible. So intense was his stare that she found her own passion responding. Perhaps she would take him to her private chamber soon and have her way with him.
Dare I remind you, O Queen? Dare I say that you have, shall we say, an intimate relationship?
Oh, there is that. But if the prophecy doesn't apply, then we lose.
Well, maybe.
If my best guardsmen and my father's magic don't stop the enemy, I will use round ear magic. Oh, but...
Queen, you must have a round ear fighting on your side. Only in that way can the prophecy be fulfilled to our... to your satisfaction.
Yes, there will indeed be a round ear fighting on our side in the next battle. And he, dear Peter, will go equipped with the strongest possible kind of ages-old magic.
Which is?
A mother's love.
Ah, yes.
She decided it was time. She reached out to stroke him in a sensitive region.
Come to my chambers now.
Yes, Your Majesty.
They know we're near Skagmore.
Helm was still woozy as she tended to be after astral separation, but knew she had to report quickly.
Of course they do. We let their spy go through, but what are they going to do about it?
They're going to use round ear magic.
But I'm the round ear of prophecy.
The queen said she would have a round ear fighting on her side at Skagmore, and that he would have the strongest possible magic. A mother's love.
What does that mean?
I don't know. She didn't say any more about it. She had this courtier who, well, dotes on her, and they... Well, it's not relevant, but it certainly seems as though they have another round ear.
I don't know anything about any other round ear, but I do know of that palace flunky, the queen's latest in a long line of panderers. She beds them until she tires of them and then gets rid of them. There's a name for men like that.
And for women like that.
I'm sure I wouldn't know. But that's all I got. They're worried about the prophecy, but they think they can nullify it with this round ear. The queen certainly didn't seem to be joking or bluffing.
What of Zatanas? He's the dangerous one.
He's against it. He doesn't like the use of round ear magic and tried to talk the queen out of it. But if his magic doesn't stop us, then she'll use what she's got, whatever that is. I wish I could have learned more, but I have no way to question them.
You learned enough, girl. We're well warned to be alert for the unexpected. Better rest now.
Helm made a tired smile and sank back on the bed, sinking immediately into a normal slumber. Kelvin felt his stomach burn as they left the tent. Tomorrow, Skagmore, and the battle that would decide if they were about to push on for Scepter and the palace. Helm had required him to assert himself, and he had done so, and saved the knights much misery as a result. But still, he hated this warfare. He just wasn't cut out to be a soldier.
Fortune come a-callin', and I did hide. Little devils at my side.
This was uncharacteristic and unmusical, but the big man was definitely doing singing.
Oh, just making a point, maybe. I can see you don't much like this business, Hackleberry.
Kelvin could only nod agreement.
Come to my tent. We've got some talking to do.
Kelvin followed him into his tent, feeling uneasy. When they passed the tent flap, he half expected to see Crumb's son or some of the designated officers set up for a briefing. Instead, there was only a large amber bottle.
Drink, youngster?
No.
You ever hear me tell about the old days, about fighting with the loyalists and the upstarts? We were winning, youngster, and make no mistake. Got about as far as Skagmore, and then...
Magic?
Round ear magic, son. Took us by surprise. The round ears, not as the gods intended, Hackleberry. Not as the gods intended.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, it was for your time, but I remember it as though it were this afternoon. I killed round ears with my sword. Did you know that?
I think I guessed it.
Hard to kill, they were. Great fighters. But the worst of it was, they had magic. Weapons such as no sane mind ever imagined. Not swords and crossbows, no. Magical.
Tell me.
Explosive thunders that blew apart men and horses. Lightning that struck with a red bolt and went right through men and war horses and good solid armor. Oh, I tell you, Hackleberry, it was awful. And some of them flew overhead, but not as birds fly. I saw two of them high in the sky, pierced by crossbow bolts. I saw them fall to their deaths, Hackleberry. But then I saw another, equally high, This one controlled the lightnings. I saw men, horses, trees, just smoking red holes where the lightning struck. We ran and we ran. We had to. There was no fighting that.
I understand.
Do you? Do you really? It was as if we were weeds and grass before a fiery scythe. Do you understand what it is to face such beings?
You say I'm one of them.
You may be one of them, son, but you haven't their magic. Not that I've seen, anyway.
No, not now I haven't. Just a little plant charming. And I guess that isn't the same, but...
But you will have, won't you?
I don't know.
How bad do you think it'll be?
It gives me a deep chill. They know we're coming, and when, and where, so they'll be ready. They aren't bringing in the dragons this time because we've been able to turn the dragons against the Queen's guardsmen too often, but they've got a lot of troops. I wish...
Me too. But Morvan's determined to fight and win. And he's convinced, Kelvin. So I guess it just has to happen. Oh, men are such fools.
You're finally seeing the light.
I am finally seeing the light. What good can it be to be a man if you just go out and get yourself killed?
Not much. That's why there are women. To catch the men and make them settle down on farms and live decent lives.
You like farm life? It bores me.
I like it a lot better than warfare or the girl mart.
Still.
But it has to be with the right man.
I don't have a man, right or wrong.
But you're young yet, John. I'm young. We have time.
Not if all the men get killed fighting.
We just have to hope that the knights win this battle and don't get killed, and that then the queen will abdicate and there won't be war anymore. Then I'll capture your brother and you... You can find someone.
Do you really think I...
Of course. You're a pretty girl if you just let yourself be.
When I tried to... Well, to let myself be... I almost got my brother poisoned.
He was a bad man. He was using you. But if you really went looking, you could find a good one.
If any good one survived the fighting.
I'll make you a deal, John. If we win this battle, then good men will survive. If we win, I'll help you all I can to be a completely female girl, and you'll give it a really honest try.
I don't know.
You'd rather have the queen win?
If my being a girl-type girl can encourage our side to win, then it's a deal.
Every little bit of magic helps.
Skegmore was particularly ugly. Faded army barracks, stripped paint, unrepaired fences, scattered refuse piles. Appalling. The place smelled, as only an army town could, of horse dung and latrines and unhauled garbage. Altogether unbeautiful. Kelvin looked from Morvan to Lester Crumb, and then at the rest of the accompanying knights, their main force, and wondered. It was remarkable that this place, so near to their ultimate goal, was deserted. The enemy knew that the knights were coming. Helm had spied on the messenger's delivery of word to the evil queen. But the enemy didn't know that the knights knew they knew. So this apparent vacancy could only be a trap. And were they to walk right into it? Yes, they were, for that was the only way to spring their counter-trap. They had drilled for this, to lure the enemy into open battle in a seemingly advantageous position, so that they would attack with confidence and carelessly. Then, Kelvin felt his stomach twitch. They had planned so carefully, but it was risky. Suppose their surprise didn't work? Suppose something went wrong? Then what? There was only one answer. They had to make sure that nothing did go wrong. So they moved down into the town. They rode all the way into the town square. Then the trap sprang. Horsemen were suddenly racing down each alley, pikes ready, swords drawn. The enemy plainly outnumbered the knights and were now closing in for the quick kill. Kelvin raised the signaling horn and blew the blast that signaled the formation of the phalanx. Now his fear was dissipating into excitement. This had to work. The knights formed a close, living fence with shields joined at the edges and spears raised and ready to stab. They had never separated far. A formation had been maintained of its special loose kind, so that each man had only a few feet to step to reach his key position. In the center, the horses waited, secure until the line should burst. archers and crossbowmen formed a line between the horses and the spearmen. In practice, it had seemed impenetrable. Now, it seemed less so, but it was ready. Arrows rained from the advancing foe as the queen's archers stepped from their concealment behind the horsemen and aimed their shafts over their vanguard. Almost casually, because of the practice they had had, the knights raised shields and stopped the missiles that sought their blood. The men in blue and gold uniforms threw themselves hard against the waiting phalanx. They met much fiercer resistance than they had anticipated. Bows twanged, missiles flew, blue and gold uniforms sprouted feathered barbs, but the sheer mass of the charge had its effect, and the phalanx lost cohesion. The phalanx had done its work. The thrust of the charge had been broken, and three or four guardsmen were down for every knight lost. Still, they came and came. The guardsmen outnumbered the knights by as much as 10-1. This was worse than Morvan's worst projections. The queen had thrown all her reserves into this effort, holding nothing back, and that threatened to make the trap effective after all. Now Kelvin and the Crumbs were fighting from their steeds. Kelvin's left hand with the gauntlet knew what to do. He had learned how to make it hold a sword, and it was now fighting with that sword so expertly that any surviving observer would have thought him left-handed. But gradually, his left arm grew tired. In a brief lull, realizing that even the gauntlet could not save him if his left arm became too tired to follow its dictates, Kelvin changed sword for shield on his left hand and took the sword in his right hand. He had no magic there, but did have some training, and at least that arm was relatively fresh. Suddenly, there were three guardsmen before him, each mounted. They were charging him as if he were a magnet. More Crumb saw the situation and angled across to engage one of the attackers. Les Crumb moved too slowly and was knocked off his mount by a lucky blow from the second. The third reached Kelvin, striking at him. Kelvin's sword blade missed as his gauntlet raised the shield and deflected the enemy's sword. Kelvin was tiring. Now it was not merely his left arm. It was his whole body. Battle was hard work. There was something else bothering him. His opponent's face, young, determined, and somehow enormously familiar. He racked his brain in the midst of the fight, but all he could think of was that the stranger bore a slight resemblance to John. That was impossible, of course. John was a girl, and this one was a man, several years older than Kelvin himself. Then the other made a deft move, and Kelvin was unhorsed. He landed hard, twisting about, and saw the enemy sword swishing down at his unprotected face. His shield was pinned partly under him. No help now. His incredible gauntlet let loose of the shield and snapped across to grab the naked blade. The stranger did not release his weapon. Kelvin's left hand jerked. The stranger hit the dust behind him, his sword flung wide. Now neither combatant was armed with a blade. The stranger raised his head, as jarred by his fall as Kelvin was. For a moment, they sat face to face, staring at each other. There was a resemblance to John, or somebody like her. A resemblance that bothered Kelvin as much as the notion of imminent defeat and death. Now, in his fatigue, he saw something else. It had failed to register before, but on the right hand of the stranger was a gauntlet identical to his own. The other man moved, and Kelvin's left arm jerked up. His gauntlet met the opposite gauntlet and grasped it. He felt the effort down the length of his worn-out arm. The two gauntlets were struggling against each other, the two that should be a pair. Back and forth, up and down and around, the gauntlets and the trapped hand struggled, stirring up sweat and dirt. Kelvin saw exhaustion on the other man's face and fear. The stranger felt the same exhaustion and fear Kelvin did, but was a similar captive to his gauntlet. The other gauntlet pulled his own, as if seeking to pin it to the ground. Kelvin reached with his right hand to help and met the left hand of the stranger. Their two bare hands grasped and squeezed and struggled and fought exactly like the two gauntlets. Soon their bare hands weakened and fell apart. Human flesh had met its limit. They could fight no more. But the gauntlet still fought like Scorpio crabs in a bottle. Figures came to stand by the combatants. One person or the other was about to be struck down. Which one would that be? It hardly seemed to matter. It seemed to Kelvin that there would never be, could never be, an end. More Crumb maneuvered his war horse as close to his son as he could. Less on the ground, guarded somewhat by his well-trained horse, was either dead or unconscious.
Oh, please, gods, if gods there be, let him be only unconscious.
More fought off two attackers. The guardsman on his right got through his guard to the side of his shield, then sliced his left forearm. Moore felt the sharp sting and the wetness and knew he was wounded. But the mailed vest he wore was still doing its duty, and the shield remained strapped securely to his now bleeding arm. He barely got his sword around, saving his face and possibly his head by the slimmest margin. He felt the swish of the enemy's sword and felt his left ear sting. He had lost part of the ear from that blow. How much he couldn't now be concerned about. Somehow his sword deflected the guardsman's, and then, with less science than he felt he usually commanded, he got his blade under the other's helmet and drove upward. Now, to see to his son. Lester was still lying there, his face turned upward.
Damn you, you've got to be all right!
It was a foolish thing to say, and he realized it. Where was help? There had to be help for them. For him, Morvan mentally amended. For Lester, for his precious son. If Les didn't live, then all of this was for naught. It was for Lester and for Lester's future children, if any, that this war was being fought. A horse wheeled to his left. Moore jerked on the reins. A brownberry shirt and greenbrier pantaloons, much dusted and a little smeared with blood. A freckled-faced boy who should be out working his father's fields and whom, Moore remembered, they had left with the main force at the edge of town.
We have to retreat! There's too many for us!
Greenleaf, is that you?
Yes, sir!
Yes, Moore! Show a little respect!
The boy managed a faint smile. A good lad, this. Moore recognized him from their training sessions. Greenleaf had been as clumsy as Kelvin Heckleberry without his gauntlet, but then had learned, as they all had to learn.
Les, I'd like to get him out of here. He got clubbed by the flat of a blade. He will live, I think, if we can take him to safety.
I'll see what I can do. So, Moore, Brodner, over here!
A dapple gray warhorse joined them. This one was ridden by a craggy-faced, ruddy-complexioned fellow who had some months ago been working hard to be a Franklin's ne'er-do-well.
You called Greenleaf?
Les, he's down.
Oh, I see.
Can we take him back?
Can try.
You'll do more than try.
Well, look out!
In the same instant, Moore's horse started to collapse under him. Moore got his head twisted around as he fell. He saw the big guardsman who had ridden in at them and the pike that had been deflected downward by Brotner's blade. The pike had gotten his mouth right behind the ribcage. He had allowed himself to forget that they were still amidst the battle. Moore hit the ground and rolled over as a warhorse's big hooves tried to trample him. Then the big guardsman was coming down to join him and Les. As he fell with flailing arms, Moore saw that his intestines had been split.
Good work, Greenleaf. You look a bit battered, Moore.
Moore stood up, shaking his head.
You'll need Les's horse. Better cut the throat of this one.
He placed his sword tip against the horse's neck.
Sorry, old friend.
Blood spurted, catching Moore's face and sword arm. He moved back, wiping at it, refraining from cursing because it wouldn't do to curse his dying equine friend.
You certain he's alive?
Can't you see that I just killed him?
Your son, not your horse.
God, for a moment he had actually forgotten. Moving as swiftly as his wounds and weariness permitted, he knelt by Lester as Brotner caught and held the horse.
Lester, Les, speak to me, speak to me!
He raised the head a little, and there was blood. Not a lot. Not as much as soaked his own clothing, but some. Internal bleeding. How bad was it? He drew off a gauntlet, wishing again that he might wear the gauntlet the round ear had. That glove was... the round ear. Where was he? Moore lurched up, gazing across the battle. There was no sign of Kelvin Heckleberry.
Find the round ear! We can't lose him!
Yes, Moore!
Moore returned his attention to his son. He felt under the brownberry shirt, trying to find a heartbeat.
If he's dead, we'll have to leave him.
He's alive!
Then get him on the horse!
This horse! You take his!
It took almost all Moore's strength, but he placed his hands underneath Les's arms and hoisted his body up to Brotnar. He had never before felt so incredibly weak. It must be the bleeding and the drinking last night and the fact that they hadn't really slept. Brotnar took Les and positioned him in front of him on the horse. Meanwhile, Greenleaf returned, spreading his hands. He had been unable to locate the round ear.
I can't fight this way. You two will have to watch out for me.
We will. The round ear. There he is.
Brotnar wheeled his horse, almost knocking Moore down. Moore strained his eyes. He counted six guardsmen riding hard. Slung over the neck of the leading horseman's mount was a slight figure wearing the green and brown. No wonder Greenleaf hadn't spotted Kelvin. He had been draped across an enemy horse.
After them! No! No, they've got him. We can't even catch them, let alone overcome them. Best we get back to the others with the word. Best we get back alive.
Moore grabbed hold of the mane on his son's warhorse and levered himself up to a mounted position. His head whirled. He all but slid off. Any notion he had of pursuing was obviously futile.
Yes. Too many guardsmen. Too many for us to fight anymore.
We've got to retreat. Regroup.
Yes, regroup.
It was a sad party that straggled back to the camp. Morven Crumb was wounded, his son was unconscious, and more than half the knights were missing. John and Helm ran out together.
Where's Kelvin?
Captured.
John turned to look at Helm and found the other's face a reflection of her own horror. Kelvin captured. What would become of him? Quickly they learned the details of Kelvin's loss. He had been carried off by several guardsmen after apparently fighting against one with another gauntlet like his own.
That other. He had round ears. I caught one glimpse of him before I had to defend myself from another charge.
Round ear magic! A round ear with a magic gauntlet! That's what the queen meant!
If only we'd understood better!
I must find him.
Girl, get that notion from your head. You can't go after him.
I meant my way.
It's too soon, girl. You haven't recovered from the last time.
I love him. I must find him.
Moore glanced across at the stretcher on which his son lay.
I know how that is. Then do what you must, girl. But only this once. It won't do him any good if you die from overdosing.
I'll watch over her.
Morven turned away.
Les! Got to get a nurse for him.
But there was nobody to tend the unconscious man. All the survivors were tired, many of them wounded. It was all they could do to take care of their own.
Put him in our tent. I can watch two as well as one.
No one argued. They were glad to have her assume this burden so that the others could collapse. They hauled the stretcher in and got the unconscious young man on John's bunk. Then, Helen ate a berry and lay down, and John watched both, the unconscious woman and the unconscious man. Both were so still it was as if they were dead. One should recover. The other? John went to Lester Crumb and checked him more closely. There was a trace of blood on his lips and more in his mouth. Something had ruptured inside him, and this was the only evidence. How bad was it? She had no way to know, but the fact that he remained unconscious did not bode well. She decided to do the job right. There was no one else to do it, after all. She got a basin of water and a cloth and washed off his face. Then she stripped his clothing, discovering numerous cuts and bruises, and cleaned these off. She tied bandages around the bad ones so that no further blood leaked and formed a more comprehensive bandage for his head because the whole side of it was one massive purple bruise. It looked as though the blow to his head had caused him to bite his cheek and tongue, and that was the source of the blood in his mouth. That suggested that he had no bad bleeding deeper in his body. That same blow had put him in a coma, and she could do nothing for that except make him comfortable. She covered him over with all the blankets she had, trying to keep his cold body warm, and hoped. Lester Crumb was a decent man who had helped Kelvin and had always been courteous to John herself. It would be awful to have him die. Helen was normal for this stage, lying still as death. Her breathing stopped, or was so slight it wasn't evident. There was nothing more for John to do except wait. A half hour passed.
Oh.
John hurried across and took Les's hand. Was he pulling out of it? John grabbed his shoulders and helped him sit up so that he could cough and get his throat clear. Then he sank back. She washed off his face again and found that now it was hot. He was running a fever. But he sank back into a more natural sleep, and that meant that he was recovering. His color was better now, despite the fever. He was a handsome man. Not long later, he stirred again, and again she helped him sit up.
Thanks.
And he slept again. Then Helen began to recover, and John went to attend her. By this time, she was feeling very much the nurse. Both her patients were improving. For the next hour, she shuttled between the two, doing her best to keep each comfortable.
Oh, I found him. They took him to the dungeon under the Queen's palace and dumped him there with two older men. I think they drugged him because he never woke up. And somebody said something about how he would sleep for at least another day. He didn't look injured, so I think he'll be all right. And maybe the long sleep will even do him good. But we've got to get him out of that dungeon.
That's for sure.
I thought you were sleeping.
I was, until I heard you two talking. I seemed to be in the wrong tent.
No, they brought you here so I could watch you. You were unconscious, and your father was wounded. And over half the knights are gone, and the rest are in a bad state, so...
I thank you, but now I had better get out.
Ooh, what happened to my clothes?
But you're feverish.
Not anymore, I'm sure. We crumbs heal quickly.
John went and put her hand on his forehead. Sure enough, the fever was down. Maybe that was his little bit of magic. She explained about the clothes and brought them back to him, then turned her back while he dressed. He stood and wavered, and she had to run to provide support before he fell.
I think you'd better lie down again.
No, I've got to consult with my father, plan strategy. With Kelvin captive...
Then I'd better help you walk.
No, my head. Oh, I'm dizzy. I think you'd better.
I'll be all right. Get him to Morven. If there's any way to rescue Kel...
John supported Les as he staggered out and got him to Morven's tent. There, a strategy meeting was already in progress. The generals had the war map unrolled and were fretting over it.
Son, how are you?
Some fool was still slashing about with a sword inside my head. But John here got me patched up, and Helen has found out that Kelvin's in the Queen's dungeon, so I had to come here.
The Queen's dungeon? They haven't killed him?
Drugged him. They say he'll sleep for another day, so they can't be planning anything sooner than that.
They've got their own wounds to lick.
Moore looked terrible. The top part of his left ear had been sliced away so that he looked like half a round ear. His left arm was in a sling.
There's not much we can do but surrender. The Queen's terms, total and unconditional surrender, aren't to my liking, but...
Don't you talk like a fool! Surrender unconditionally and she'll hang or imprison the lot of us.
She might not.
And I say she will, the officers at least.
I agree with my father. I gather a messenger arrived while I was sleeping, and that means the Queen knows our location. And this may just be stalling for time while she gets together another army to destroy the last of us. If we surrender now, we have to be prepared to flee Rudd. Now maybe some of us can survive in the Sadlands. A few can venture into Dragon Country, but most of us will have to get all the way out. I'm hoping that most of us can find our way to Throod, but...
You can be sure you'll be taken in. We Throodians don't abandon our friends.
I appreciate that, Captain, but my point is that we could be better off not surrendering and being dispersed, with many of us executed out of hand. We might best stick together and fight on. The worst that could happen is that we'd get killed.
When most of us could live if we surrender. Understand. The word is gall in my mouth, but I'm trying to be practical. We have scant resources remaining to fight and...
I'm not prepared to say we surrender unconditionally.
Why not?
Because of the Round Ear.
He's captured, imprisoned in her dungeon. He'll be killed, probably publicly. Even if we had the manpower to raid the dungeon, they'd kill him before we could fight our way in. They'd like nothing better than to have us present our remaining troops for slaughter like that.
I hate to agree with you, Jeffreys, but I fear you're right. There's little we can do to save him.
Yes, there is.
John, why are you still here? This is a strategy conference. Go outside and...
Play? The round ear you talked about is my brother. He didn't want to be a hero and fight this war. You, Mor, and you, Les, you forced it on him. He'd be back on the farm now if you hadn't interfered.
She's got a point, Father. She has a right to be here, and...
She doesn't know what she's saying. She's only a girl.
Yes, a girl, and Cal's only a boy. But then, who else are you fighting the war for? You told us over and over, Mr. Crumb. It's for the young. It's not for the old that we're fighting this. Everyone here heard you say it. Everyone in camp.
She's right.
Youngster, if I could help your brother through direct action...
But you can! You can! He fought for you, and now you talk of abandoning him. What kind of people are you?
Gods, it's true. When I saw you down, son, I couldn't think of anything, but... You got anything to say, John? Anything we need to know?
I think we should fight. That's all I have to say.
We?
We patriots. We who care about Rudd.
You're only 14, John, and female. But you may be right. Maybe we should make an all-out effort. Tell the knights we're making one last effort to take the capital, defeat the queen, and rescue the round ear.
Are you daft? After all you've been through, you still want to fight? I wasn't going to suggest attack, merely that we not surrender.
I don't want to fight at all. But you've convinced me time after time. Father, we have to defeat this tyrant. We have to rid this land of its ugly sore so that it will heal and become fair and free once more. How many times have you said it, Father? How many?
I don't want you to be killed, son. You came too close today. I don't want any more deaths. I don't want to surrender, but if we surrender now and get us to...
She'll never let us out. She'll want a formal surrender. With you and me and the main officers, and then you know what will happen? Then she will send us to the dungeons, and if we ever get out from there, it won't be in any condition to fight anybody. It's more likely just for execution. There's no reprieve in surrender. You know it's so.
You may be right, son. You may...
I say he is right. I say we better fight another battle and make it an all-out one. Even if we don't win, maybe we can force surrender terms.
How can we win? They've got magic.
No more than we had. Father, we've got arms.
Maybe so. One all-out attack on the capital.
She won't be expecting it now. Not after that last defeat. And she doesn't have that many guardsmen in good shape right now.
Mor turned to the map. As the big man traced a possible route of march and attack, John noticed that the river ran all the way into the capital. Why not go by the river, she wondered.
We've lost a lot of ground and a lot of lives. But if we start our march tomorrow, and we're not stopped before we get there, 4 days will see us there.
4 days? I thought it was only 1 day's ride from Skagmore to the capital.
1 day's ride for a messenger on a fast horse. 4 days for a tired army, hauling supplies, foraging for food. The Queen's guardsmen will take longer than that, because they're licking their wounds, and they don't believe there is any need to return rapidly to the capital. That's our advantage. Striking by surprise, at their weak spot, the capital, whose reserves have been expended for the battle just past.
I'll come along.
No, you won't, girl. Your mother needs to be sure of at least one child. If we fail, that's you. Before we leave, you are starting your march home. The same goes for the Round Ear girl.